This is Christy and Katrina at the DK 805 podcast, Breaking Stigmas. Today, we're excited. We have our first guest here. We have Natalie, who will be sharing her story of recovery, as well as her story of loss with her brother. He was her brother, Alex. He was 30 years old, and during his birthday celebration, celebrating his 30th birthday, and she'll be sharing her story of loss. And then we have Chrissy here with her story of recovery, as well as her story of loss with her son, Dom, who passed shortly after Devin.
Yeah.
Katrina, would you like to start for us?
Yeah, I'm just so grateful you're both here. It's really just to meet you in person, for one. I've just followed along. It's how I connected, well, how Chrissy and I connected, that organicness. And then just when I first saw, you know, Love is Free Foundation that you started for Dom, and having that be, I just followed along and just, and loved the connection that I felt, that I see in the boys' eyes, just so much similarity, just even though they're not similar in eye color. It was just this. So that was what I resonated with, just their love in their heart and their peacefulness and just that nature part of them. That really was why, just that connection. And then when Natalie was just, she shared so openly and honestly about being just in this walk and then having to go through any bullying or shame that can be attached in the stigmas that we're here trying to break. And I'm blown away, really, that we're sitting here together, and I'm really grateful.
And sometimes recovering out loud also brings about a different level of pain that we can't see. We're sharing our stories to help others recover. But sometimes the internet isn't always nice.
No.
Now, do you want to speak on that?
Sure. As far as, you know, recovering out loud, for the most part, I feel like I've got a lot of support in that regard. Most people are very kind, and they can see, you know, the strength that it takes to go from using hard drugs on a daily basis to getting to a place of recovery, right? But then you do also have other people who don't quite understand. And I had made a few posts to honor my brother regarding what he had been through. And, you know, I did get a lot of comments, mostly on Facebook, I've noticed. It's very interesting, mm-hmm. the dynamics between the different social media platforms. Mm-hmm. But on Facebook, I've gotten a number of comments where people have said things along the lines like, where, if, you know, if you do drugs, this is what you sign up for, meaning because he did drugs, he deserved to overdose and pass away. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, calling him names or saying, you know, horrible things about him, you know, and it's people that, of course, never knew him. Mm-hmm. But it is part of what you sign up for, I suppose, mm-hmm. when you're mm-hmm. willing to share mm-hmm. So publicly. But to me, it's just incredibly important to address the shame and that's associated just in general with addiction, but also with, you know, family members who have struggled. Because when you have such a deep rooted shame, I mean, that's really what brought me to using in the first place, was all the shame that I was riddled with, and I didn't know how to manage it or how to cope with it, really. I just didn't like that yucky, gross feeling. And I'm like, what do I do to get rid of this? Right. And that's for me what brought me to using, because it numbed all of that.
Oh, I just hit my mama's heart so hard and heavy, because that is like, it's almost like the answered question that I found myself asking all the time. Like, what was it? What was it that would not let that recovery like stick, or the rehab or the treatment? And that piled on sort of like shame that comes from like trying and starting and stopping. And then also too, just the thinking maybe that you can outrun it, or that feeling of just like, that isn't the time, it's not the time. And now with the fentanyl being that it's just, it doesn't give you that time. We've spoke on that many times. It's just, there's, that is what this generation, we are just wanting to hopefully to save this next generation from having to have these like this is not supposed to be happening, where it is fentanyl takes you and you don't have that chance to go back to recovery or to get mm-hmm. back on that walk. And hearing that, just that vulnerability, that is that being so beautiful. Thank you for sharing that, is because I was just like, that's what I always wanted to know. Like, was it just because of that? It's that instant, I don't want to feel that anymore.
Definitely. And I didn't even realize that that's what it was until recently, I'd say. I mean, I heard a number of talks done by, I can't remember her name. Oh, Brene Brown, where she talks a lot about the differences between guilt and shame.
Yeah.
And it kind of just, you know, planted a seed for me, really, where I wasn't really quite ready to understand what she meant. But more recently, I've fully been like, okay, yes, it's definitely that shame feeling it's caused me to not be able to stay clean or sober or whatever the case is.
Now, did you relapse, or were you a one and done when you sought sobriety?
I started going to treatment when I was 19, and I went many times on, I want to say like 8 or 9, maybe even 10 times to treatment. So it took me a very long time to get clean and stay clean. I mean, now I have 5 years, right?
Congratulations.
But yeah, thank you.
So happy.
So beautiful.
It's been a long journey, that's for sure. But yeah, it was definitely not a one and done. And I think, you know, the people who are able to seek help and get it the first time, that's amazing, right? But it's not typically the norm, mm-hmm. especially if it's something that you've struggled with for, you know, a long period of time.
I think when we were talking earlier, you know, the age in that, where, you know, especially like with, like, say, alcohol and having that be where, you know, for me with Dylan would say, you know, I won't do that, but I will, that this will still be in my life. Because that's mm-hmm. all my friends are still doing that. When COVID hit, that was being delivered. So how do you, that was being delivered and you're home and you're isolating and you're not doing well and you're suffering in the other things, the shame and the loneliness and anxiety with weed. So that was my experience. And
And how with you, Chrissy?
Mm-hmm.
How we met Chrissy it's interesting. It's similar to how Katrina and I met. So when we talk about the internet, there is positives within the internet too. And we met because you started following our podcast.
Yeah. You know, algorithms.
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys are popping up. What, right when I started the Love is Free Foundation Instagram account. And, you know, I just started it and let's see what happens. And I think right away, like, we connected from there.
Yeah. I love Love is Free. And I just resonated with that. And then, when that started coming about, Love is Free Foundation, can you just go into how that kind of came for you?
Yes. When Dom, my son, was still with us, we both kind of, started the recovery journey together. His experience is really what woke me up. My drug of choice was not fentanyl at the time. I was alcoholic, right? I was drinking a lot of wine. And I hadn't realized that about myself yet. Going into recovery myself, I learned about the service aspect of recovery, and he was in recovery as well. And we were recovering in different ways. Yeah. Like, I was more just relying on 12-step communities, and he was in, like, you know, real deal treatment rehabs, outpatient. But he was living at home with us the last year of his life and going to outpatient. Yeah. So I going through all the experiences with him during his journey and him being homeless, you know, on and off.
Yeah.
over a couple of years, really at this point I've realized it was God kind of rearranged my heart, and everyone on the street I could now see as someone's son or daughter or nephew or brother or, you know, I'm like, these are human beings.
They
were all born as babies and they all have families, and like what has happened to them? Right. Like that's kind of where I'm at. And so I have a hard time turning a blind eye on people that are really struggling. And so I just brought it up with Dom. I was like, I feel like homeless outreach would be like a great service project. Like, would you want to do it with me? I was like, I mean, dude, you know all the places they are. Like, you can be the spearhead of this mission and I'll like make care packages. And you show me where to go. And I was like, it'll be a great team. He was like, yeah, that sounds cool. He's like, why don't we put them in our car? Like, we never know when we're going to see someone. And I was like, yeah, that's a great idea too. And I was like, okay, you know, I'm like a creative type of person. You give me an idea. And I'll like bring it to life. Right. I love that. And so I started making these postcards just like on my spare time of like, you know, I had a ton of rehab sources in my back pocket,
always.
So I was like dividing them up into areas and like, oh, we can hit this area, and putting together these postcards of like instructions, really direction for somebody that's lost and struggling. Like, here is the social services office.
Step one.
Can help you get some Medi-Cal. Here's a couple rehabs in your area that accept Medi-Cal.
Right.
Here's a church that will help you like take a shower and get food. Like, you know, just resources.
That's so beautiful.
You know,
that is really,
For someone that's like down and out, like on the curb with nothing, and like, you know, here's some snacks and some water and some resources. If you want to live a different way, you know, like people love you. Like, and God loves you, you know, like you're worthy. That's really like where I guess my heart is at. And he said, yeah, he wanted to do it together. So I would put together all those postcards and showed him. And and I asked him, if you were on the street and somebody handed you this, like, would you feel like it was condescending in any way or... And he was like, no, it's good. He was very like soft spoken in a way. I was like, all right, cool. Let's plan on it. Right. Plan on it. We never walked forward in that. In a few months, you know, life goes by and I work full time. He was trying to rebuild his life and it, getting jobs and working with my husband and going to his outpatient groups, rebuilding his own personal relationships, you know, with his girlfriend and stuff like that. And we just never did it. You know, he relapsed and he died. And then we all went dark. You know, our family and life stopped for a few months. But that idea reemerged and kind of gave me a little bit of hope and purpose on how to get up and out of bed and keep moving. And like,
keep it's a life.
And it's a way to keep connected with him and keep his, you know, memory out there. And it, you know, I started talking about it with my sister and an old friend of ours that we've known our whole lives. We were like on a hike one day up in Tehachapi, and I just brought it up to them and I was like, what do you think? mm-hmm. would you guys be down to like do this with me? Because mm-hmm. I lost the other yeah. partner, yeah. right? Yeah. And they were like, yes, let's do it. You know, just like, yeah. let's do it.
Yeah, they knew it's right.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So then that's when it, you know, my creative hands like went to work and I asked my sister, Joni, like, would November 2nd, like the 1 year anniversary of his passing, be a good time? Like, would you be available to do it yeah. that day? Like, as long as I can get one person to say yes, yeah. I'm like, okay, I've yeah. got a partner and we're going to do this, you know? My sister's, you know, very humanitarian heart.
Going back to first, that is that purpose in, you know, pain into purpose to start that foundation is so beautiful. Thanks. So beautiful. And I did early on, Carrie, when Dylan was in active use and wasn't at home, but he was choosing to not live soberly in a space that was, he was in a garage space, but he had rented and there was other people there. But I would just make packages, same thing, put things in, you know, ready to hand out bags and just started just in that, just to be, I look back now in a way of like, was I, just wanting it to be like, okay, this, I'm doing this to, you know, prevent or think of, it was also for myself to know that I'm doing something, please save my son. But that's just not how that for not, you know, how that works. But, my heart to see this as everyone's child. I mean, there's someone's daughter, someone's son, and it's, you know, just to, I did that really early on. And I did have to kind of just pull back because then after Dylan did pass, I was really triggered by anyone that looked like his age and had a skateboard and had the backpack. And I was, this is the hard part, for the first, maybe I just was, it was all just a blur, but, I was very vulnerable to just, getting people help and putting them in spaces like a hotel or something. And, my husband had to kind of step in and just say, you know, because they're in unhealthy spaces. So there is like, get them help, go through the help door, but not be their help, because mm-hmm. I was trying to do it again and try to get them to the help. And, that was their journey. So I could just lead them or just be love, be kindness and always, but I just couldn't keep, you know, paying for the hotel room right. or keeping them in active use. And,
well, and one of the things that helped me is breaking the stigma
yeah.
as Katrina is talking about is, and I've said it on a few of our podcasts, my struggle hasn't been addiction. So I didn't understand addiction. So I had a different mindset and I'm not proud of this, but I do want to say this out loud so other people can hear it. I was naive in believing not my child. That is unhealthy thinking, and that comes from ignorance. And so one of the places I learned how to walk next to my child was from people in recovery. So I would go to the family meetings and I would sit down and I would listen to what they were saying. And in hearing you speak about the shame, and I would hear those same things within my child. But when my child was trying to explain those things to me as a parent, I am not proud of this part of myself. In Devin's early illness, I was under the assumption it should be one and done. We've already paid for rehab. Mm-hmm. What haven't you gotten? You're just not working the statements. Statements, the program. You're just not working the steps. And there was a lot of finger pointing in his early illness. And the more rooms I sat in, the more people I were around, the more I learned to love my child. The more I learned to sit down where he was at, sit down next to him. And we, towards the end of his journey, we would go to groups together and we would share, and he would share his shame with me. And we developed a close relationship. So thank you for sharing out loud. Thank you for letting parents know. part of the family unit. When one person is sick, a family unit